swung and lined to deep left field. It is gone!
Hit well. Deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
Welcome back to Disgusting Baseball. This is episode 206. I am your host, Matt Lyons. And on this week's episode, we're talking about the first Guardians series of 2023 against the Mariners. We'll answer some of your questions, and meatballs are back, and they are juicy. Join me for all that and more, another Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
I'm jacked up for the big game tonight. Which one am I talking about? Doesn't matter anymore. It could be baseball, because it's on every day now, forever, and we're all happy again. I'm great, Matt. I had a great weekend. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, it was you actually got to go to a game, which I thought was
I did. Not fair. Very exciting. A lot of fun.
Well, you went to a national game, so I don't know about exciting.
Well, hey, I saw a team that won a World Series. Two teams that have won World Series in the last, three or four years or something like that, because they were playing the Braves, too. So
at least you got to see the Braves.
I missed a leadoff home run because I was getting a beer. Woo!
Well, who does that at the beginning, though? I haven't been to a ton of baseball games, but I think I would wait a little bit before.
So they have these, grab-and-go things, right? There's not even a person working there anymore. It's just, you grab a beer out of the cooler real quick, and it scans it, and you pay and go. You're supposed to take, 10 seconds. Anyway, the person in front of me was the slowest human being on Earth. And I thought I had a few more minutes, and it turns out that Ronald Acuna Jr. has home run power. So I missed that. And then Matt Olson hit a home run right after that. And all I saw was the
scoreboard ticking up while you're sitting there waiting for your beer.
God damn it. Luckily, it wasn't a 2-0 game. I would have jumped out of a window because no one wants to sit around watching Josiah Gray get lit up. Oh, God, he's bad. Matt's bad.
They are a very bad team. It was kind of fun that this weekend, because normally they open in Cleveland. So there's always the built-in off day in case there's rain, and there's usually rain. Yeah. But we were one of the few teams that got to play on Thursday and Friday.
Yeah, just four games, just bang, bang. I was like, this is awesome. I took Friday off from work. I usually take opening day off because they were playing out west.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, well, I'll just take the next day off so I can stay up until 1 a.m. to watch baseball. And I was like, well, I'll just watch other games during the day. And there were no other games all afternoon, which was a little frustrating. But I just had a nice day anyway, so there you go.
Yeah, I'm actually not hating – I still hate them – the late games as much.
Mm-hmm.
And they're growing on me, weirdly enough, but I'm glad we're not going to have to do them anymore. But starting at 9:40 is not so bad when it's compared to nothing for so many months.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Do you know what? I think it's time we talk about maybe some baseball the Guardians have played. Do you know what we usually do about when we talk about?
Tell me, this is one of your worst transitions yet, man.
It's the first one of the year, Merritt. Shut up.
I did not tee up. I'm sorry.
Meatballs, Merritt. That's what we're talking about. Little tidbits. We're kind of just combining segments here because normally meatballs is just a way to avoid a general talking about every single series and to focus on one really cool thing that happened. But we're just going to combine them because there's only been one series and there's not a whole lot of news. So just talking about what we saw when we watched the Mariners and the Guardians play. And good news, Merritt. It looks like our podcast name is relevant at least for a little while because
yes.
The Guardians are playing full-on disgusting baseball.
Just nasty stuff. I have a friend who's a Mariners fan, and she's a sorority fan, my wife, too. And she was, texting my wife, this is the worst baseball I've ever seen. And I was like, hell yeah, I love this. Give me more. Yes.
They're so back. I love it.
What do you mean stressful? This is how a baseball should be. Ooh.
Especially now, man. I think we said before that the lack of shifts and the bases and the throwing over, it's going to make the Guardians, everything is built for the Guardians to be better.
It'd be so funny if they just rush and wreck shit.
I know. I think even the sped up pitch clock helps them because they're not a team that a bunch of big lumbering guys who need to take their time and do whatever. They're just these little guys who just hit the ball, throw wherever you want. I mean, there's a couple. Josh Bell's walked a ton and attempted a stolen base and it did not go well, but it was hilarious to watch as he, I would call it fell backwards into first base as he slid, but it was not the most graceful thing. Anyway, as for the meatballs, my first one is not exactly a going out on a limb. It's Tim Herron's 4 strikeouts and 4 at-bats. That just had to be my meatball. He said in the post-game interview his parents were scheduled to fly home on Sunday, but they changed their flight to a red eye so they could stay and watch it. The whole thing was just really cool. They showed them in the stands. But more importantly, he brought an absolutely nasty slider. Threw 14 sliders and just 4 four-seamers.
Gas.
It was absolute. Is that gas or sliders gas? I thought it was.
No. He also had a good fastball.
Did also have gas. Yeah. He had gas.
He was hitting 98, I think. It was excellent. I love him. Yeah. I'm like, hey, another guy. All right, sure.
I know. They just come out of the woodwork. And to steal a tweet from Sarah Langs, she said, Herron is the first pitcher since at least 1901 to face 4 batters and strike them all out in his MLB debut. So I think that's pretty good.
Tungsten Armo Doyle bullshit right there.
And it's, to make it more meatball-y, just hear me out. I mean, he wasn't exactly facing the heart of the order. And not to get too far ahead of myself here, but he and Andrew Miller, that slider looks awfully familiar. I mean, Andrew Miller had a lot more things going for him than just this slider. Hear me out. But they look very similar. The break on them, like I looked just the numbers just to make sure. And Herons is 10.8 inches on average. Miller's was 11.7 on average, which is ridiculous for a slider. But they both have this thing where like they just sort of disappear and they end up in the catcher's hand in a different spot than where you thought they would be going over the plate. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. It's just a super good slider. And it reminded me very slight shades. I mean, they're both lefties. Obviously, Andrew Miller is his own shape of a human and Tim Herron is not there. But there was just a lot to like about Tim Herron. And he reminded me a lot of Andrew Miller. Comp on him after his first game, but he just reminded me a lot of him and the excitement of seeing Andrew Miller come out of the bullpen. I think it's already going to happen with Herron now, just being excited to see if he can do that again every time until he doesn't do it, basically. Which,
yeah, I mean, he's definitely earned himself a spot. And you're right about the slider, too. It seemed like he could kind of shape it a little bit, too. Like sometimes it would be snappier. Yeah. A couple of them were just snappier, other times a little bit sweepier. I mean, you know, in some ways, it reminds me of the way that, oh my God, I can't remember his name now. The other gigantic lefty they have on the team.
Sam Henches.
Well, he actually has like two distinct pitches, but there's kind of a blur in between the two of them. And being on a team with Shane Bieber, who has effectively one breaking ball, but he kind of does whatever he wants with it.
Yeah,
it's a very interesting kind of a new generation of still dirty pitches and also fastballs. I love to see it. And more, I noted this. I think it was the game was it that I was watching. I think it was like the Yankees game on opening day too. Like they have like one lefty. Like in the bullpen at all, and I was boring my wife with a long diatribe the other day after I noticed this about the overall the pending death of the loogie is gone as it is.
Yeah,
but like the mediocre lefty no longer has the dream of being in a bullpen because you have to be someone like Henches or Herron or whoever, right? Where it's like I'm not a lefty, I just happen to be left-handed and I throw 97 with a slider that moves 6 feet. That's another small death now because of goddamn Rob Manfred for the common man to have hope to play baseball, but what are you going to do?
And I think, I mean, you are absolutely spot on with the way he shapes his pitches. Cause I was looking too, just trying to find an extra meatball about Herron earlier. And I noticed that like you look at his Baseball Savant, they have the pitch movement, the scatter charts. And most of the time you see like a group of pitches up here or like their sinker, cutter, four seam or whatever. But Heron's slider is just like all over. It drops different amounts. I don't know how much of that is on purpose or if it's just that ball is just out there doing his own thing when it's sliding, but it's almost like he has, it's not enough to be two distinct pitches, but it's very much like he's doing
something.
One thing with a slide. Yeah. He's doing intentionally. Sometimes a slider falls further. Sometimes it doesn't, which is I think really fascinating. And I just can't wait till we see more of him in the majors.
And that's just one of those things. Which like, I don't know, just get good at with practice over time. I don't know. But again, if he's effective, even for a few months, I mean, I know we're going to cycle through a bunch of guys, but totally dope stuff, and I'm very happy with the whole thing. So, yeah.
And, I mean, do you keep him and Henches both in the bullpen when Henches comes back?
I mean, why not, right? That's the thing. Like, they're not lefties. They're just guys who are good at pitching who happen to be left-handed. I mean, Henches is great because he does have a distinct pitch to face off against right-handed guys. Like, you know, he throws a sinker so he can get some run, in addition to his fastball, so he can get some run away from right-handed hitters. I don't know if I don't know if Herron has anything like that yet, but I would hold on to him because, I mean, honestly, I find him more impressive than Nick Sandlin. Sandlin's fine, and he's useful because he kind of gives you a weird different arm angle thing going on there, but just briefly looking at the list of guys who they have in the bullpen, I would say, just for velocity reasons alone, if we had to start making a choice once Henches comes back and assuming he's fully healthy, it's like you're looking at Eli Morgan or Nick Sandlin as the odd man out, and like,
or Curry. I mean, he's probably going to be.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, I forgot him as well.
But then
you
also have Cody Morris, too, who is going to be the one that bumps the next guy, whether it's
right. Like yeah, so,
Morgan
I mean,
or Sandlin or whoever.
They're getting to a point, just in general, honestly, where the Rays were forever, continue to be, where they just keep on producing these faceless gentlemen who just are. Just like, oh, another one of them. All right. Yeah, sure.
Sure, why not? Get up there.
Yeah, keep on going. Yeah. So I just figured this was part of the long term plan of the team, along with their kind of adjusting how they did, you know, offensive player development, which seems to be starting to pay dividends over the last couple of years. So maybe they saw this all coming down the pike with the whole, everyone knew all this was going to happen. Who are we kidding? Everyone knew the ship was going to be banned 3 years ago, 4 years ago. Like this stuff was going to happen. It doesn't just come out of nowhere the year we hear about it. It's been probably been talked about at privately owners meetings and assumed it was going to happen eventually because of someone who bitched about it. But yeah.
All right, what's your I know you have several meatballs. That was my only one, but I know you have a couple.
I'm going to call this first one as one, and I'm going to call it base running. the first one goes like this. This was in game two. Very simple if you read it off the game day thing. Josh Bell grounds out third baseman Eugenio Suarez to first baseman Ty France. Jose Ramirez to third, one out. Now, if you think about that, that's crazy because Jose Ramirez was on second. And the ball was hit to the third baseman. Why on God's green earth would a runner go from second to third? But it was just one of those things that happens during a game that proves and shows why a player is that much better than others. Like, he just read the entire situation so perfectly. This is the broadcast was talking about how, like, the entire dugout went nuts when Jose Ramirez took third base. It's not a stolen base. It's just a sack, like a sacrifice by Josh Bell, but just a dazzling feat, I think. Just a little thing that ended up, I think Ramirez ended up scoring there too. And even if he didn't, like, you know, just continued pressure. And I think that's kind of the style of the game that we like to see the Guardians play in general. But just a heady play by a guy who can also go 30-30, no problem. It's the kind of thing you expect a scrappy guy who's just trying to earn his way onto the field to do. And it just, I don't know. One of the things where I went, ooh, when it happened. And, you know, early in the season, especially when we don't have a lot of numbers to go off of, I loved it.
You need those ooh moments early in the season to get by on. And Zach Meisel wrote today about, like, things that set the Guardians apart. And one of them was basically that, the way Jose Ramirez runs the bases, which is one that doesn't get talked about a lot because as much as the Guardians do it, like you said, it's not a stolen base, so it doesn't go down as a statistical thing, really. But it's just so much pressure they put on all the time. I don't think you see it unless you're a Mariners fan and just watch it happen. Like, nobody believes the Mariners fans what just happened. They just see some baseball and some box scores, but they know. They watch what Jose Ramirez and Amed Rosario do to their team.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. Like, the box score, obviously the box score is great, very important, but, like, there's so much, you know, these when we talk about intangibles, this is the sort of thing that actually is an intangible, because you can't really quantify this or put it anywhere. You can describe, like you said, you can describe it to someone, but you can't, and they're like, so what? And it's like, I don't know, man, it's like, who does that? It's like, I think that's the coda to all of, to any intangible, like, actual thing. It's like, it's crazy, you know? So it's like when, you know, like a couple of times they were like, when Albert Pujols had 10 stolen bases and you're like, how did he do that? His feet were made up lead. So, so that's the first half. The second half, you kind of touched on already. But did you know that last year, Josh Bell was 438th overall in sprint speed and 25th among first basemen?
I believe it. I do not doubt that. Not
the Guardians are 5-1, five stolen bases in six attempts this year. That one caught stealing was the hilarious attempt by Josh Bell.
It was the best slide I've ever seen.
I truly loved that. I was like, what was my entire reaction?
You know, last time he had a stolen base was 2018, and he had two of them that year, and also two in 2017.
I love it, man. Between him, I mean, Naylor tried a couple times in the spring. I think he tried some kind of take an extra base also and succeeded. It was the last game of the series, the second last game of the series, where he, in the extra innings, he was able to get not an infield hit, but like run out, beat a double play. And I'm just like,
what is happening? Oh, Naylor, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah,
Naylor. Well, he just ran so hard that I don't know how much he caused the bad throw, but I mean, without hustling, that play might not have gone as well as it did, but.
I'm going to check the U.S. Geological Survey records for right around that time just to see if there was a minor earthquake and it freaked out the first base because they thought Mount St. Helens was blowing up or something.
It's like Marshawn Lynch in that one playoff game.
Exactly. Yeah. interestingly enough, do you know who was first among all first basemen last year in sprint speed?
Oh, Josh Naylor, obviously.
No, it was Owen Miller.
I believe that. Yeah.
Owen Miller starting at first, I don't know if he'd be on first base at that point, but he would have gotten a stolen base. And
for sure.
I thought that was very funny.
That was part of the reason I think the Guardians had such a slanted, like every time you look at speed stats, they were so high up because their first baseman was Owen Miller, who couldn't hit like a first baseman, but that boy sure was fast.
You could sure run like a second baseman, that's for sure. Yeah. They're fast though.
Do you just have two or do you have another one?
I got kind of a half of one. This is just an observation during Cal Quantrill's start, and it's halfway backed up by some math from the spring. But I swear he was getting the ball out of his hands with like 9 seconds left on the pitch clock, like consistently, like just get it and throw. And like you know, what do you call it? StatCat or Baseball Savant has their new pitch tempo, which is not the same as pitch timer, like when they're getting the ball out of their hands. Between like the ball exiting the catcher's mitt and him throwing it again, like 14 seconds passed is how they were counting it, which is third fastest on the team and like 25th fastest in all of baseball. But I don't know. It's like he was purpose built for this new style of get the ball, throw the ball. Now it didn't result in great, you know, results because he got goddamn shelled.
Yeah, well, he also got squeezed. I mean, like, lower end of the zone was just gone for him. He needs that to do.
Yeah, which is tough for a sinker ball pitcher. Exactly. Yeah, it was not the best called game on earth.
And he did get a warning too. I don't know if you saw that at one point, but the ump came out and warned him for going too fast. So he's clearly zipping along there.
And that's part of what I want to talk about it too. It's like, isn't the rule that if you're in the box, you can pitch? Like,
now it's they have to be engaged with you. They have to be looking at you in there. Yeah.
I love when we make new rules that can just be kind of like, that's kind of what it means. It's
subjective, yeah.
Like, why should we have concrete rules? This is baseball. It's supposed to be insane and dumb. Like, all right. That's your argument. I accept. But I don't know. I'm interested to see if we get some firmer numbers on when the guy actually, I'm assuming it's compiled already, and we're going to get some sort of thing where I'm just curious to see who, between time of the pitch clock actually starting and it gets out of their hands, who the fastest guys and workers are going to be, because we also know who the slowest ones are. On the Guardian specifically, it's James Karinchak and Emmanuel Clase. I don't know. Let me ask you something. I guess it's a tangential kind of transfer, but how did you feel about the Seattle fans like counting down the pitch clock as certain relievers were on the mound? I know they did it to Karinchak, they did it to De Los Santos. What were your vibe? Because I thought it was funny. Counting a different time, honestly.
Yeah, no, I love the fact that when he got that, when Karinchak got that first violation, the crowd erupted. I think anything you can give the crowd, like you give them a reason to believe they're affecting the game, you're going to make the game so much louder. And like the counting down thing, it reminds me of like watching the Taiwan team and the WBC when they had the chants and everything. Like getting people to chant anything, I think, is fun in a baseball game. And if you get them to count down, I mean, ask me again in like August when it's happened so many times. But right now it's fun. Like anything that gets the fans involved when it's that, I think is really cool. I think they mentioned on the broadcast that they should be counting at the wrong time to mess with them. It'd be awesome if they coordinate that.
Oh, yeah, that'd be incredible. Yeah.
I mean, they can see it in a bright. We don't see it on the screen, but pitchers can see the timer. So maybe it won't work, but maybe like Karinchak, he's just so in his head at that point and not looking at the clock that maybe it would work. But yeah, I think in this case it was awesome. It was awesome like when it happens and they were so loud it shook the camera.
Yeah.
That was fun. I don't know. But ask me again later, but for now I think it's amazing, even though it happened against two of the pitchers on my favorite team.
I know JT Realmuto was talking about that after they gave up like a 9-run single inning, and he was like, "Yeah, man, this momentum is something else. Like, it's like if the pitcher lets it get to them, it gets to them really hard, and like just it's almost like you could see that happening with Karinchak with that 3-run homer in the first game. You're like, oh no, this is gonna go so bad. it just built and built and built until." Eventually, who was it? Ty France just moonshotted him. And I mean, the Guardians were not coming back from that one because Castillo was so good and their bullpen is dope. So, yeah.
And I imagine that's going to happen more. Like, that's got to be a spiral. Like, if you throw a bad pitch or something and you look up at the timer and suddenly it's down to like 10 seconds, like, there's nothing you can do. You just got to get up there and pitch again.
Yeah, exactly. You can't like walk around the mound to like relieve you, take a breath. Like, you just can't do it. I feel like I saw. Someone on the Guardians trying to, like, I think it was Heron actually, like after he got one of his strikeouts, he tried to go for a little like strikeout, like, you know, stalk.
Jog.
Yeah. You know, it's like, I mean, it's something pitchers do. And then said he just could not. He's like, he had to get around and pitch again. It's like, oh, well, sorry, buddy, get in there.
I do think, I'm fully into the speed of the game right now and the bat to bat. I wouldn't mind at all if they just didn't do the timer between at bats. Because that's never been the problem for me. It's always been the pace within an at bat. Like, I want to see Jose Ramirez strut out. I want to see pitchers be able to do that little strut after they get a strikeout. Like, I don't care how long it takes between at bats. I want between pitches to be as fast as it is now. So if that was
Come on, don't we want to see Lance Lynn adjust himself after every strikeout and curse at the departing hitter? Like, I don't know. That's everybody. That's America's pitcher right there. We want to see him be the most American man he can be.
But yeah, I think the between stuff is not as important as, which maybe that would, that probably helps overall time get down, but I don't care about overall time. It's pace that I want to get down, and speeding up between pitches is what does that. So
yeah,
I don't think they're going to change it at this point, but if they would, that would be something I would.
Mm-hmm. That was something my brother and I, cause and we went to the Nats game this past Saturday. And, that's the one thing we were talking about. It's just, in general, you're just not at the ballpark as much anymore. Like, the game on Saturday night, like, I didn't see any because I got home like 9:30 after going to the ball game and going out after and getting a couple beers. And then I watched a little basketball. And all of a sudden, it was 11 o'clock and the game was like basically over. I'm like, what the fuck? But like, even being at the stadium, I will say it was a little weird for the game to end. And I still have like half a beer left. I'm like, how? What happened here? So
I do wonder if at some point if vendors are going to bring that up, because they're going to have a full year of looking. If it affected sales at all, I think because even if we settle into the speed, like, I don't know, do you just buy a beer earlier than you normally would? But
I, that's the thing. Like, I'm used to buying a beer, you know, before the game, and then like the fourth inning, and then the seventh inning, or something. Like
and
that.
Then the seventh, eighth, ninth, and on the way out.
Well, that's the thing. They cut off beer sales in the seventh, and it's like, all right, whatever. So you got me. but I don't know. So I don't know. I will say, just being at the park itself, it's hard to like. One of the nice things about going to a game, you know, I was there with a few friends, like my wife and some other people that we knew, and we were jawing and bullshitting, and I look up, and all of a sudden the inning is over. And, like, you know, obviously it's my own fault for not paying attention, and admittedly it's the Nats against the Braves, so.
You damn millennials got to look at your phone and talking to friends, whatever.
You know what? Watch Maybe it's my game. Own fault for trying to have a social experience. I don't know. I mean.
I think part of that, like we were talking before the show, I think part of it is just the fact that it's early in the season. A lot of these are, there's never a ton of hitting early in the season. And I think part of that is making everything go by much faster.
Like you said, like, the guys will start wearing down a little bit. The hitters will start warming up and getting in the groove. Like, there's some guys who don't have hits yet, right? I think everyone on the Guardians has gotten their first hit that plays regularly at least, right? Yeah, everyone's got to hit that on them. But like, you know, the guys who play it, Cam Gallagher and Mabry's Valori have not gotten a hit yet, but again, they have four at bats between the two of them. So, but that's the thing, guys kind of get in the groove, and yeah, we'll see how it plays out. But
and overall, I mean, this was a fun series. Like, NASCAR does their thing where they start with the Daytona 500 because it's their Super Bowl they put up, they call it, sort of, but it's kind of felt like that because this is not to ruin the rest of the season, but this could end up being like one of the best series.
Oh, it was incredible. It
was awesome. Like, every game had their own story, and
they were tight. Like, that's the thing. Even a 9-4 game that we had on Friday, like,
didn't feel like that.
It didn't feel like that at all. Like, Seattle was still threatening and getting guys on base and pitching okay. You know, the Guardians just were better, is all. They just kind of knocked the rust off after getting brutalized in game one, and then game two, like,
that was the one where Kwan had 5 RBI, right? It was the second game.
Game three, the 2-0 game
was Savali
was just unhittable, and Naylor went yard. Didn't Jimenez also go yard that game?
There was two solo home runs. That was the most un-Guardians like win ever.
How we penciled it in going into the year. Like,
but that was the one where Savali was, holy hell, he looked really good. That cutter, even when it was over the plate, it looked unhittable. It, again, like Aaron's slider, it just looks like it disappears and it's just there, and they swing and miss.
He is a guy very much who I'm as far as the pitching rules are concerned, or the fielding rules are concerned, the shift. He's the one I think I probably have in my head circled the most is like guy who might struggle even more so than Quantrill, just because at least Quantrill can kind of hump up, you know, throw hard occasionally. Savali does not have the velocity, so he does pitch into his defense. But luckily behind him are great defenders, so it works out.
This is an original thought. Somebody said that, I can't remember who, but somebody mentioned that like. Pitchers like Savali, who have a bunch of pitches, I wonder if that helps with the speed. Because if you get like the batter in that spiral of this is going really fast, and you have like 7 pitches you can throw,
yeah,
I think with Savali, a pitcher like that who can throw, he threw all 5 or 6 on that start, and he looked really great. Like, if you can do that consistently, you're going to just throw so many batters off. They don't have time to sit and read you and try to figure out what you're doing. It's just next pitch is here, hit it, whatever it is.
Yeah, because if it's someone like, I mean, I'm not going to say Spencer Strider is easy to hit. He is not. He's very good. But he's a, you know, he's a 2.5 pitch pitcher. if you're facing a good lineup, that might, you know, you guys can sit fastball a little bit easier at least. If you're facing someone like Savali, it's like, you can sit fastball, but he's throwing four of them, you know?
Yeah, they're all moving ever so slightly differently.
Exactly. So it's like, and then you can drop that curveball, which is just really, really good. It's changeup and everything else too. That's an excellent, I didn't even think about that.
It was not original thought. I tried to look before. I could not remember like if it was in our comments or on Twitter, but somebody mentioned that. I thought that was a really good point.
Well, it's your thought now. Trademark.
That is mine. Let's just edit out all that crediting I tried to give. That's all mine.
Let the producer know. Yeah.
Go ahead.
That's an excellent. I mean, I didn't even think about that because, I mean, they always say you want to get the hitter in a rocking chair, right? Like work up, then go, then pitch slow and low and away, throw a curveball. But there is definitely. I wonder if that would kind of pile up on other guys, you know, within the inning because they all talk to each other. It's like, hey, what do he throw you?
I have no idea.
I don't know, man.
And I don't think it can be overstated like how good this Mariners lineup is too. Like every lineup, it's the early in the season, so maybe they weren't quite up to what they're going to be. But I mean, the Guardians use 11 pitchers, only three allowed an earned run: Quantrill, Gaddis, and Karinchak. And I mean, this isn't a home run. Like half of them are projected to hit 20 home runs. Ty France is a beast. He's a guy I always just kind of forget exists. And you look at his Fangraphs page, like holy shit, he's like 130 WRC plus every year.
Seattle, so you know, but yeah. Rodriguez is.
But hey, I fall asleep watching a lot of Seattle games, so I hear that. I hear those names as I'm drifting off.
But no, again, this is a 90-plus win team, and it wasn't all just pitching and defense. Like they can hit the ball. Julio Rodriguez is no slouch at all. He's a great hitter. Well, Colton Wong is fine. Like I said, Franta, Eugenio Suarez. I don't know. I'm of several minds about him. Quite honestly, I think I was talking about him. Iconic, and I don't know. He definitely not living up to the hype.
He always looks like, I tweeted it, he looks like he's on the verge of tears every at bat. I don't know why.
He could put it together. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But like you said, I forgot they get to hit. Like this. I love the first couple games of the season. I'm like, oh yeah, he's on that team. Like they got to Oscar Hernandez. Like that was honestly a pretty good pickup.
Yeah, they have Sam Haggerty is on their bench. He's an old Guardian farmhand. There's just people everywhere.
But you know, like, they're not world beating. You know, Dodgers. Padres level offense, but it's not a bunch of slouches. And the fact that they, like you said, they shut them out twice, right? Yes, no, once.
Twice or just once? Just the once.
Yeah. Once, okay, yeah. I'm sorry.
But even that, I mean,
but that was great. And it'll be nice to get McKenzie back. Obviously, Gaddis did not have the ideal start,
but I mean, he was not nearly as bad as what he was last year. I think that change up we saw a little bit. That thing is ridiculous when it works. It's straight up a wiffle ball, and he had a couple of those pitches in there. If he can. I hope this is like a good starting point for Gaddis to not have. If this was another disaster, like this feels like it would be awful for him. But the fact that there was something to build off of, I think, could help him. And the fact he gets to face the A's in his next start, I think, will also help because they are god awful and they're just getting worse. So maybe that'll help him too. Weird thing about the pitchers is, do you know who? Can you guess who the top three strikeouts came from? Or there's four that were tied for the most.
The most strikeouts by the Guardians.
Yeah, or no, there was, okay, so there's two, and then two are tied for third place.
So I'm assuming it's Bieber. Gaddis had four, so him is in there. I'm just looking at his numbers right now. And then I'm assuming Heron's in there somewhere or something. I don't know. Who is it? Tell me.
Do you watch much baseball anymore?
Boo, I hate that you have that thing now.
No, it was Stephen Morgan, and then Heron and Gaddis both have four. So Bieber's not even up there. It was all relievers and Gaddis. Yeah,
he was skating back and forth. He was pitching very much into his own defense. I don't know. I'm not worried about his start, but I did. It wasn't like it was.
He's definitely not the power Shane Bieber anymore.
Just watching what he was going up against opposite. Like you reminded, oh yeah, that's what an ace looks like. Like whoa, it would be nice if they could find another one of those guys. And I think Bieber can. You know, I mean, I figure once we get into like May, June, July, he'll be back. He'll be feeling better, and they'll have McKenzie back hopefully, but. Yeah, it just seemed like what Castillo could do with the ball. And then the fact they got to Ray so quickly was great, too. But
the other fun thing about that game, which I did not know until I'd never heard about it at all, is the little 3D like game day thing. That's wild to watch. I don't know if you've ever seen that. But like you can go in. It's only the MLB TV free games. But you can go in either on desktop or on your app. And like, you know, you usually see the at-bat and they use the little MLB The Show model. A little corny thing. But you can do a 3D version where it uses the Hawkeye tracking. You can see every little movement they do.
I don't like that. I mean, I like it, but
it's the wildest thing.
That is creepy and strange.
It is creepy because I was just sitting and watching Julio Rodriguez in the outfield for like a solid 5 minutes just seeing what he was doing.
What are you doing out here, buddy?
And like between innings, you can see him like walk back and like all the infield is huddled together. And you can actually see because you know how Jose Ramirez stands, his shoulders are up. It like interprets that as his arms are always up. So he looks hilarious. And you can tell which one is Jose. And you can actually see him like do his little swagger walk back to third base. It's both awesome and a little creepy, but
I love it.
I can't wait. I want to see that more. I just want to see it used more. So that was really cool. Anything else before?
Which was your favorite game of the four?
I like Savali being really good, even though that was only two home runs. Because that one also had Andrés Giménez making a really good defensive play, and his home run was great.
Hitting a moonshot, yeah. And we got a good big boy in his maiden home run for the year. Oh, I can't wait to see him do that 35 more times.
35 at least, and also Josh Bell. I don't know, probably that one, I guess. I guess the last one was fun, too, because Mike Zunino was hitting home runs, but also that one ended weird with Josh.
We have to talk about Mike Zunino, don't we? Oh, God.
We do. He's legit. We have a question about him in the list. That's why I haven't mentioned it much.
But. Okay. We can circle back to that with the question then.
But he's looked legit so far.
Well, we had to play George.
Stephen Kwan's game was fun too, the second game. But also that one, I didn't have to recap that one, and I stayed up to like 3 in the morning with the previous one. So I was kind of half watching that one, half asleep. But that one was fun too. I watched that one the next day.
I think that was my favorite. And then I fell asleep watching F1 qualifying.
So anything else about the past game? What was your favorite game? I guess you just said that one.
Yeah, that one. They lost. Tough luck loss in the first game. They just kind of
brutal, just because they couldn't hit Luis Castillo.
Took him to the woodshed. A bunch of guys got hits. Felt good. Obviously, seeing Kwan just continue to cook. He's probably my favorite player on the team at this point. I mean, him or Naylor, honestly, are my two favorite players.
Really? I think mine has turned into Giménez. And considering I was a very big Giménez doubter at the beginning,
I'm not besmirching Andrés Giménez in any way. I think Kwan is hilarious. And I always just imagine an entire team of guys exactly like that. And how much no one would like playing them. Like, this is the worst. And then Naylor is just a big old, he's built like a barrel. Like, they think barrel chested. No, this man is just a barrel with legs. It's incredible.
It's really great. I still love his stance. I also like that Bo Naylor kind of stands like him, too. Mm-hmm. Even though he's not nearly as barrel chested as Josh Adorable. Is. He does the same exact thing. I think.
And I just love the home run he had. I just love the way he gets into a home run. Like, he's just like leaning back, like he's almost falling over. It's great.
I can't wait to see some more big clutch home runs for him. Anything else about the past games before we go on to answering our
team? No, I can't wait for more baseball. I hope they play again soon.
I think they will. What do you know?
Oh, good.
Turns out they will 159 more times.
I'm glad we get this breaking news coming in. It's fantastic. I'm glad they're playing 163 games that you just said.
You know what? They're going to play at least 170 because they're going to get to the postseason. There you go. As always on Monday, we asked on Twitter and Facebook if anybody has any questions, and we got, I think, some really good ones. They're always good when the season first starts. Our first one from Kevin Bean on Twitter, he asked, can you give a primer on why so many Guards fans are lukewarm on Amed Rosario? I'm not as advanced stats later as I would like to be. And this is a really good question. I think the way you phrased it is perfect, too. It's not that anybody, like, hates Amed Rosario. It's that everybody's just kind of lukewarm on him. He's just a very lukewarm player. Part of that, I think, comes his ability matched with how much playing time he gets at a premium position does not match up what you might think it would be, which, and also where he bats in the lineup second every day. Mm-hmm. Like if he was a utility guy and batted like eighth, I think everybody would love him. Absolutely. Yeah. But it's the fact that he plays an everyday shortstop. He's not a great defensive shortstop. He plays second. He's not, when Andrés Giménez is hitting like seventh, he's sitting second. I think it's just a matter of that. And just that he gets a lot of playing time for. He's still does. I think it's also a lot of Guardians fans are looking to the future of the guys they have, like Arias and Freeman and Angel Martinez in a couple of years. So everybody just kind of sees him as a roadblock, which isn't necessarily fair to Ahmed. It's a lot of teams would give up a lot to have an above average shortstop bat who can also play the position, even though he's not a Gold Glover. It's kind of like that Family Guy thing. Like anything could be in the box. It could be a boat.
It could be a boat.
Yeah. We have a small boat, but in the box could be a larger boat or
any kind of boat at all.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's basically it. It's just his playing time compared to what he does is.
I think that's part of it. I mean, first of all, I think he has gotten better defensively ever since he started diving. I can't believe that's all it took. It's like, all right. Like that's what they talked about last year. It's like, yeah, he started to dive more. I'm like, what?
We told him he could use his glove now. Now he's really good. He's got to figure it out.
Yeah. So I think it's a manifold of reasons, right? I mean, obviously, like you said, him batting second in a premium position, who he's replacing. I think it always sucks to be the guy immediately, I know he didn't immediately replace Francisco Lindor, but he kind of did, actually.
Yeah.
So replacing Francisco Lindor, who was a beloved player, you know, bigger than Cleveland, obviously. I think we've discussed that in the past. There's a certain level of streakiness to him, I guess. It's just intensely frustrating because when he's on, it's just dazzling. But when he's off, it's so awful. And like you said, if he's doing that and he's batting, just to pick a random place in the batting order, let's say seventh, and the guy's batting, let's say seventh is batting second instead, then I feel a little bit better. So it's, again, like you said, it's not like people hate him. It's just he's incredibly streaky. He's at best a just barely above league average hitter. I think he had a 105 WRC plus last year or something like that. So 5% better than average, which, again, it's fine. It's just having a guy like him, he just fits the where he is in the lineup and what his skill set is so like 1966. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Oh, exactly. Yeah. Like, cause he's just fast. So you got to put, he's the shortstop and he's fast. He's got a bad second.
Right. The guy in front of him gets on base and no matter what happens, Rosario will not ground into a double play. I'm like, great. How about he just hits good? So, he has a relatively, and we'll see how this changes with the new rules and everything like that between the bigger bases and the lack of shifting. Will he get more seeing eye signals and things like that? But I mean, and then the last part, like you said, it's just, I have been told over the last however many years that the thing that the Guardians have more than of anything else is premier middle infield prospects. And the fact that I have to watch Ahmed Rosario, not these guys were supposed to be like amazing, is frustrating to me. That being said, Clint Frazier was released. All these young prospects keep on getting released. Like, as you know, a mutual Twitter friend of ours says, Ed Carroll, trade your prospects. Like, so
yeah.
Use them to turn your big team into a better team. I'm always, you know, like I was looking at the lineup for the yesterday, I guess, for the Clippers, and I was like, I wonder how many of these guys could turn into, I don't know, a great player. All of them? Fine. Trade the entire lineup. So yeah, I think that's why. It's just he's replacing a guy who was just one of the best, you know, one of the three best at the position and one of the best shortstops in Cleveland history. He's incredibly streaky. Like you said, seems to be a roadblock, and he's perfectly fine. And I guess that's really all it is. Yeah. He's perfectly fine.
He's the guy I'm going to root for when he leaves, like when he's signed somewhere for $100 million because there's no other shortstops. I think
I have come around on him. You know, like I think last year was definitely a sea change, especially just because it was defensively. I think that's really what it was. He was just a sieve in 2021, and he became much more sure-handed and confident and everything like that, and really kind of made the whole infield kind of work a little bit better. It's just, it's the most important position in the entire field, defensive, second most important.
And there was second a play.
Depending on how you want to flip shortstop and center, but yeah.
Yeah, and there was a play in that 2-0 game where I mentioned the recap, this video of it if you want to see. Like, I don't know if this is just some guy on a couch 1,000 miles away critiquing a professional athlete, but
more than that, Matt, you know how far away Seattle is. Listen,
several thousand, a million miles away at least. But there was a play where it was like a dribbler back to second, and they're both running at the ball, and it seemed like one of those plays where the shortstop has the natural angle to grab it, and with his momentum, step on second, make the throw. But Andrés Giménez had to like swoop in front of him and get it, and then do a much more difficult play to get the double play. And full credit to Rosario for knowing to bail, but the fact that I think they were swapped 100% of the time Giménez makes that, I think most shortstops probably make that, but it's just kind of one of the little things that show you that he's not an elite defensive shortstop.
There was a play like that, I think, in the game on Sunday, very similar, kind of a grounder up the middle. I mean, it could have gone either way, but like you said, assuming you have an elite ranging shortstop, he probably gets that ball and is able to at least get an out, if not two outs, and then the Mariners end up scoring on that later that inning as well. So, yeah, it's just one of those things where he's perfectly fine, and considering what we used to see there, and who plays second, a better shortstop, and what is supposed to be in the minors, it's like, I feel like we could do better. I hate to run a guy out of town because he's perfectly fine, but and obviously in a month or so he's going to hit 600 the entire month. We go, this is awesome. Hell yeah, dude.
But the good thing is you won't have to run him out of town because at the end of the year he's going to sign a big contract. And
there you go. It's perfect. Trade him.
Speaking of great defense, Missy Grudzinczyk on Facebook. She asks, so far there's been a lot of pass balls. How long will Tito stick with Zunino if he doesn't perform at the plate? And good Lord. We knew coming in because there was that new the leaderboard stat that the Baseball Savant and Mike Petrillo and them put together, he was one of the worst. And we saw the numbers of it. We saw that. I just don't think it clicked just how.
Well, we talked about sample size. You know, he didn't play a lot of games last year, so it's probably
not a big deal. But, oh, it's just like every single time. Because the guard, I just don't think we noticed with Sam Henches that the Guardians throw, they spike so many curveballs, like, especially Shane Bieber, like his big 12-6 curve.
Yeah.
Hits the dirt. You got to stop that. And just every time it just bounces off Zunino, and there it goes. He's running again.
Having a guy on third and having any of those guys, any of them, honestly.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Karinchak. Savale, like, they have these huge curveballs that is part of the reason that this team's been good for a while now. They produce incredible pitchers. You need to be able to stop the ball. And it's just, it's driving me nuts because I'm like,
it's just
Perez everything. Would have stopped that. Gomes would have stopped that. Hedges would have stopped that.
Luke Maley probably would have stopped
that. And it's just. I mean,
part of that is we've just been spoiled by great defensive catchers, but also it seems like. Because Mike Petriello tweeted today as like a teaser for the leaderboard coming out, that looking at the 2023 leaderboard and someone is already -5, and instantly like five Guardians fans like, yeah, we know.
Yeah, we
it's Mike Zunino. We've been watching the game. We know.
I think if, all right, silver lining. We're really understanding now why the front office just completely eschewed offense when it came to the catching position. Because, yeah, it sucks where once every three innings you have to watch a guy, you know, tap lazily out to the, you know, shortstop or whatever. But if every inning or every whatever, I don't know, all of a sudden I'm on edge. And like it has to play a trick with some of the less confident younger pitchers too, right? Like, can I throw, you know, my big curve in this moment where there's a guy on third and it's a 2-2 count and there's two outs? Like, I have a chance to throw a big out pitch here. Can I do that, though, or is that run going to score? Especially for a reliever. Like, that sucks. So, he catch, you know, it's like he misses stuff. It's just,
watch. I mean, every other aspect is fine at catching, as far as I can tell. Like, his framing is fine. I'm sure he calls a decent game. They've got a bunch of good pitches already, but it's just that one aspect. Like, can you imagine the difference between just knowing wherever the ball goes, Henches is going to dive on it and be there, and then otherwise it's just a brick wall back there not moving? Like you said, it's got to mess with some people. Interesting to see, obviously, by the time this is recorded, by the time this comes out, Zach Plesac start already be over, but he seems like a guy that if this happens a couple times, it might get in his head a little bit, and then he might just collapse instantly. But
well, good thing for him, he doesn't have any good pitches, so.
Don't worry about that. I mean, he's kind of one, like, we'll see. Watch him pitch. Well, no hitter now, just because I said that. But
I will say, I'm looking forward all of a sudden to them playing the Royals, just so I can watch Salvador Perez again. Because, listen, that guy can, first of all, he's 17 feet tall and 8 feet wide. But also, he can block a pitch. And it's just, I guess, if nothing else, it's silver lining where you're like, I can now much better appreciate something because what I had and I got used to it and now I've lost it. So,
this is just a way of showing us.
Hey, listen, idiots, we had this for a reason. Sure, he'll hit 280 and hit 28 home runs and it'd be a -3 win hitter or player. Like,
well, the good news is Austin Hedges, he is out there on the Pirates, so they could trade whatever and they'll get him back. Because
hey, do you want this pile of garbage? Hey, we some. We have literally a bag of baseballs. Yeah, actually, those cost money. We have those. I'm cheap.
Yeah, and to answer the question, like, how long he'll stick, I think if he hits like he has over the weekend, because, I mean, he was terrible in the first. He's not going to hit a home run and two doubles in every game, but if he kind of
then we're fine.
If he hits 162 home runs, then but if he averages out to this series, I think you can leave him in there until Naylor's ready. Like,
well, that's the thing. Like, Naylor's mashing the ball. Obviously, it's early goings. Like, I guess he has to be ready this year, obviously. Like, he's a 23 or 4-year-old or whatever it is. He's not that old. But yeah, he's early 20s, and he's in AAA, and he's hitting, and he can already play good defensive catching. Like, and then what, I know, and the second question there, obviously, is what do you do with Zunino? But that's a question for another day, because, like, you don't need a bad defensive catcher on the bench. I already have two bad offensive two catchers I don't know anything about, quite honestly, because they're non-entities to me between, again, a man whose name I won't remember next week, but Mabry's Viloria and the other guy.
Cam Gallagher.
Is that who they are? Oh, yeah, Cam Gallagher. Okay, long time ago.
Yeah.
Damn, I can't believe they have Cam Gallagher.
neither one of them is not going to be there for very long. I think, like, the situation, we've already seen a situation where having three catchers kind of screwed them because they had to stick Josh Naylor in right field.
That was great. And he got to show off his sick arm. So I don't know what the hell you're talking about. The ball
immediately went to him.
That was dope.
I don't think this has worked out the way the front office probably hoped. Like using, he's been a little slow in the pinch hitting for the catchers, and the result was just sticking a guy out there on defense. Yeah. But
I mean, again, it's early.
Yeah, it's four games. None of this matters too much. It's
maybe Zunino will settle back in and start blocking balls. But those are the types of things that early in a season you can talk about and be like, this doesn't seem good. It'll probably be fine, right? Right, guys? Hey, where are you guys going? Get back here, right? No. So we'll see. I don't know. I mean, it's a wait and see, but to answer your question, listener, hopefully June, because then they can call up Bo Naylor and, you know, manipulate service time. And then he'll hit so well, he'll win Rookie of the Year, and then it won't matter, and they'll lose 8 years of service time because they were jerks. So there you go.
I can't wait for Naylor to come up. He's going to be so – he's going to be fast, athletic, and hitting the ball.
Yeah.
He's
good, man. We'll be saying things like Adley Hooman? Hooley Rutschman? We'll figure one out. I don't know. Whatever.
Adley Trashman.
Yeah, Trashley Whatman? Yeah, you know, things like that.
I think we'll finish up with this question here. I like this one. Matt Obendorf on Facebook. He asked, when will Trevor Stephan overtake James Karinchak for the full-time setup role?
And, hasn't he?
I don't think so. See, my answer was I don't want him to. I want James Karinchak to stay in the eighth inning and get a clean slate and have Trevor Stephan be like the fireman guy.
I mean, if you look on Baseball Reference, right now, currently, Trevor Stephan is listed as the closer. So the real question being,
when is Emmanuel Clase going to be the closer again?
Has he lost his job? No, honestly, I like that look as well, because it's nice that, like, just as we saw with Miller back in 2016, especially having that guy where you have this at any given time, you can be like, okay, fine, we're going to have the best splitter in baseball come in, screw you, and it'll work out because he is the second best relief pitcher on the team. Like you said, having Karinchak come in with a clean slate is what he needs. I mean, I don't know. I'm probably fine with the situation right now.
Yeah,
I understand the other side of things. I can't imagine James Karinchak as a fireman, but now I am, and for some reason I love it. So I don't know.
I think it's in terms of like the pecking order of who's the best relievers. I think Trevor Stephan is probably overtaking Karinchak just because he's
better,
ridiculously good, and Karinchak is up and down. When Karinchak's at his best, I think he's better and almost as good as Class A, but you absolutely never know what you're going to get when he goes out there.
I mean, if gun to my head, like, do I want to go with him or Neil De Los Santos in a key situation? I'd probably go Karinchak, but I'd think about it.
The fact that you have to think, like, I'm not going to think about it with,
like,
Neil and Trevor Stephan or Emmanuel Clase.
I like Sam Hentges more than James Karinchak. I don't know. He's huge. Like, he's thrown from a higher position. He has a better, you know, he throws some more strikes. So I don't know. Like, it's an embarrassment of riches, I guess, is the nice part about it, is they have all these guys where we can have this conversation. You know, the ninth inning is tidied up, and then you can figure out another three innings there. So really, you only ever need a starter now to go five innings. And considering who their 3, 4, and 5 are most days, that's fine. So,
yeah. And pretty soon, they got those big three prospects coming up. Like, I mean, Jesus, that's a lot of pitching. It's going to be
ridiculous. It's funny because it's still not enough pitching.
It's never enough.
They're going to need more pitching.
On that note, Merritt, call it for this week. If you haven't already, follow us on Cover the Corner. On Twitter, I'm Matt ROY. Merritt is at Merrill Lynch, like Merrill Lynch with lunch. And if you haven't already, leave a review on the podcast, Spotify, Apple Podcast, wherever you listen to Disgusting Baseball. Thanks for listening. And Merritt, talk to you next week.
I'll be there.